Welcome to your weekly Oxstock edition for Tuesday, the 16th of June, 2026. My name is Avshalom Gissin, and I am compiling the edition for this week. News items have been selected and read by Kristen Dennison and Janet Proudman. We have a great mix of news and transport service updates, new development projects, charity events, local curio and sports from Oxford and the Greater Oxfordshire area. Sunrise times this week range from 4:45 to 4:46 in the morning, and sunset times are from 9:25 to 9:27 p.m. And now for the news. Enjoy!
Double yellow lines are going to be painted on 27 roads in Oxford in a crackdown on dangerous parking. Among the roads proposed for the changes by Oxfordshire County Council are Hollow Way, Sandford Road and Oxford Road in Old Marston. The council said that proposed double yellow line extensions in Sandford Road, Littlemore and Oxford Road are intended to deter dangerous parking at school drop-off and pick-up times. Louise Upton, a parish councillor for Old Marston, said problem parking has long been an issue in the area. "I wholeheartedly welcome this intervention," the Labour City Council cycling champion said. "I often cycle along this road at school drop-off or pick-up time, and I'm always sad to see so many parents sitting in their cars, sometimes with the engine idling, sometimes making it dangerous for other children and adults trying to walk or cycle along there. It narrows the road and reduces visibility. People open car doors without checking for bikes. In addition, it often causes difficulties for the number 14 bus trying to negotiate a stretch of road that has effectively become single file because of inconsiderate parking. In the vicinity of Oxford Road is Meadowbrook Cottage, the Swan School and St Nicholas School, with around 1,300 combined pupils attending. Independent Littlemore County Councillor David Henwood said, "It's the people who live close to Sandford Road who will know what's needed." He said, "I'm told the plan is to extend the double yellows going up to the shop from the main roundabout. This does allow drop-offs for up to 10 minutes and would make passing safer for road users." More important are the views from local residents along this stretch, who will know what works best for them. A spokesman for Oxfordshire County Council said, "Following various complaints from members of the public, city and county councillors, local schools and site observations by officers, no waiting parking restrictions in the form of single and double yellow lines are being proposed in various roads around Oxford. The single yellow lines will only apply from 8 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. on Mondays and Fridays, while the double yellow lines will apply at all times as usual. The proposals will help prevent obstructive parking in general, parked vehicles obscuring visibility and footway parking."
More than 1,500 new public electric vehicle charging points are set to be installed across Oxfordshire. The new points, to be rolled out by 2028, will double the current number available to the county and support drivers who do not have access to private parking. Two charge point operators, Connected Curb and Bicester-based EZ Charge, have been awarded contracts to deliver the expanded network. Gareth Epps, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Transport, said, "This program will provide a huge confidence boost to drivers looking to switch to EVs and build on our leadership in this field. One of our top aims is to get reliable, accessible public EV charging into rural and deprived areas. This will help ensure that nobody will be left behind in the transition to driving electric." Connected Curb will install and operate on-street EV chargers on the highway, Oxfordshire County Council-run park and ride sites, and other car parks, while EZ Charge will be responsible for charging hubs in city and district council car parks. The network will be prioritized in areas where a high proportion of residents lack off-street parking. Chris Petterman-Jones, CEO of Connected Curb, said, We are thrilled to have won the Oxfordshire contract and look forward to bringing our tried and tested EV charging solutions and innovative smart charging tariffs to the area. As one of the UK's largest and most experienced CPOs, we look forward to meeting the growing EV charging needs of Oxfordshire's residents, visitors, and commuters, and providing the highest standards in EV charging and customer service. Funding for the scheme comes from the government's Local EV Infrastructure Levy Fund, alongside other grants and private investment from the charge point operators. Most of the chargers will be standard 7-kilowatt devices suitable for overnight charging, with a smaller number of rapid chargers planned for strategic locations. Keir Mather, Aviation, Maritime, and Decarbonization Minister, said, "We know charging availability is one of the biggest barriers to people going electric, so it's great to see over £3.6 million of our investment rolling out 1,500 new public chargers in Oxfordshire, more than doubling the number available to drivers in the area. As part of its broader EV strategy, Oxfordshire County Council will launch a community micro-hub scheme, inviting towns and parish councils to apply for chargers at community sites such as village halls and sports pavilions. 6 pilot locations have already been selected for installation later this year. The countywide rollout aims to give residents real, practical choices and improve confidence in making the switch to electric vehicles through accessible charging infrastructure." A government decision could save school bus routes from being scrapped. A new exemption scheme allowing non-compliant vehicles to continue operating under the Public Service Vehicles Accessibility Regulations, PSVAR, means county operators now have more time to upgrade their fleets. Without this exemption, many Oxfordshire school routes faced cancellation due to a shortage of PSVAR-compliant vehicles. Freddie Van Mierlo, MP for Henley and Thames, said, "In a county like Oxfordshire, we know that villages most often lack a secondary school, so transport is a necessity to get there. Busy parents can't be taken away from their work to ferry children long distances when a good bus service already exists." Liberal Democrat MPs across Oxfordshire raised concerns directly with ministers amid uncertainty over the future of school transport services. Mr. Van Mierlo submitted a written parliamentary question and arranged a meeting with the Department for Transport. The new 4-year exemption regime will allow paid-for, closed-door, home-to-school coach services to continue operating while operators work towards compliance. However, operators must maintain a proportion of accessible vehicles within their fleet and provide a compliant vehicle at no extra cost if a child with disabilities needs to use the service. Mr. Van Mierlo and Caleb Miller, MP for Bicester and Woodstock, are due to meet the minister responsible on June 16th to discuss the plans in more detail. Mr. Van Mierlo said, "I am encouraged that ministers have listened to the concerns I have raised, but will continue to monitor the situation closely until I am confident that transport arrangements for local children are secure for the long term. I'm looking forward to meeting the minister alongside Caleb Miller, MP, to drive this point home." Oxfordshire MPs said, "Liberal Democrat Oxfordshire MPs have led in raising the alarm with the government. We represent the most rural county in the southeast of England, and we know how much parents rely on the buses to get children to school. We welcome the government's decision to listen to the concerns raised by parents, schools, transport operators, and local authorities." They added that the announcement is an important step forward and should provide reassurance to many families who are facing significant uncertainty about school transport from September. However, it is important to recognize that today's announcement is not the end of the conversation, the MPs continued. The detail matters. We now need to understand what these requirements mean in practice and whether existing operators will be able to continue running all current routes. A council row over the proposed locations of new traffic-free quiet lanes has left local people and businesses uncertain of the future, with claims it is causing confusion and worry. The quiet lane scheme planned by Oxfordshire County Council is set to see 10 roads closed to traffic using gates or bollards, creating routes for cyclists, pedestrians, and horse riders where there is an alternative or adjacent available. The council says there is no set list of where these roads will be, and potential locations will be decided following requests from parish councils. But that claim has been rubbished after Conservative County Councillor Thomas Ashby shared screenshots of a council document on social media listing locations where schemes have been requested or supported. Mr. Ashby said, "I'm really curious as to why some local politicians are claiming that there aren't any proposed pilot sites for quiet lanes. There is. There is a list." County Council Transport Chief Gareth Epps maintains the document, which has since been shared by the BBC as a list of potential lanes, presents areas where there have previously been expressions of interest or conversations about quiet lanes, but it is not a list of proposed or confirmed sites. The document includes the following locations: Blackthorn Village, Wendelbury to Chesterton and Weston-on-the-Green, Kennington, Radley, Curbridge to Lew and Breeze Norton, Hanwell to Great Burton, Stoke Lynn to Caversfield, Towersley, Ewelm, Locking, Coombe, Marston, and Longcott. Mr. Ashby said he received the document on May 20th, the day after the Council Cabinet approved the Quiet Lanes pilot, as his ward was included in it. He said, "The County Council needs to be transparent and explain where this list has come from. I feel it important that if an area is under consideration for the scheme, then the community should be consulted properly. If what the council say is true, and schemes need to come from a parish council with support from their county councillor, then this list should not have existed in the first place." A council spokesperson said the list was initially shared with councillors as part of our work to make them aware of conversations that had previously taken place about locations in their area. Mr. Epps says the pilot scheme is still in the early stages, and the local authority is working with parish councils and county council elected members to identify sites and work out if they are feasible to deliver. He said no new sites have been confirmed, and not all submissions will be successful. He added, "Most proposals are expected to be presented to the county council as a direct result of local concerns about traffic flows, speed, and safety." Bogdan Randu, owner of Green Cars on Wendelbury Road, was uncertain about what was happening with the scheme after the road his vehicle repair shop is on was included in the document. He said a quiet lane would have a huge direct impact on his business. Mr. Radu added, "I don't think it is a good idea," and noted that he did not know how his customers would be able to access his store. The business, which has been open for 16 months, is one of several garages and car dealerships based on the roads in the list. There were also several bus routes. Liam Walker, leader of the county's conservative group and a West Oxfordshire district councillor, said, "I've been contacted by residents and businesses who are concerned about the uncertainty these proposals have created." He said the sharing of potential locations without clear communication or local support inevitably causes confusion and worry. Julie Adams, from Bainton near Bicester, opposes a scheme in her area, stating that there has been no proper consultation done with all residents or any of the business owners. Stuart Gordon said, "If restrictions are put in place, they, drivers, will go to different areas, and small towns and villages will suffer the loss of that trade in shops and accommodation." Mr. Epps said, "Before any sites are trialed, we will expect to see dialogue with local residents and other stakeholders, including businesses such as farms, to understand potential impacts and to help decide whether to continue developing an individual quiet lane. If a quiet lane does go ahead as a trial, changes can be made and there will be a public consultation to gather feedback. As part of the pilot program, we would not consider a quiet lane on a road where there is a bus route." Another place where Mr. Epps says there will be no quiet lane in this pilot is Whitney Road from Breeze Norton to Curbridge. He said, "This is not on any list of proposals. It has not been explicitly requested by the parish councils on the route." Following his assertion that the road would not be used, Mr. Walker and Mr. Ashby claimed a common sense victory. They had opposed the use of the road as a quiet lane after it was included in the council document along with parish councils for the area. Mr. Epps said, "It is nonsense to suggest that this road is on any list of proposals. It is simply untrue, for the simple reason that no parish council will propose it. Anything that suggests to the contrary is simply misinformation." Amid the back and forth, other quiet lane proposals are moving forward, including some in the list. Radley Parish Council has shared a consultation about Sugworth Lane on Facebook, which states that fears about traffic on the road had been raised since July 2018, and in June 2025, a meeting was held with the county council about safety concerns. The consultation says the parish was approached by the county council to ask if there was any interest in submitting Sugworth Lane as part of the Quiet Lane pilot. Councillor Linda Crowley said the measure has received support from residents on the lane who think we use our cars too much and we should cycle and walk more. If this lane goes ahead, it would involve a 6-month pilot with gates, positioned to stop vehicles except emergency services using a road with the aim to improve safety, accessibility, and rural character. The parish council's online poll has been shared in online communication groups and is open until 11:59 p.m. on Tuesday, June 16th. A new shuttle bus service has been launched to a garden attraction. The Oxford Bus Company has partnered with Waterperry Gardens to provide new shuttle bus on weekends and bank holidays. Launching from June 13th, the service goes between Thornhill Park and Ride, Wheatley, and Waterperry Gardens. Buses will call at all stops on the line of route, Oxford Bus Company said. A spokesman said the service will run until August 30th and added, "This is perfect to enjoy a great day out over the summer months, with 20 acres of landscaped gardens, a shop, gallery, and even a tea shop." Waterperry Gardens is an award-winning 20-acre ornamental garden and rural estate on the other side of the M40 from Wheatley. Located just 7 miles from central Oxford, it is famous for its historical 200-foot herbaceous border, a plant center, and its origins as a women's horticultural college. Services will run hourly from 9:30 a.m. at Thornhill Park and Ride until 4:30 p.m. The final bus from Waterperry Gardens will be at 5:45 p.m. Waterperry Gardens was made famous by Beatrix Havergal when she founded her School of Horticulture for Ladies at the site in 1932 and is open all year round for visitors. It recently featured on an episode of the BBC show Gardener's World with a visit from presenter Carol Klein.
An MP wants urgent action over inequitable bus cuts, which she says have left residents isolated, unsafe, and struggling to reach the city centre. Annalise Dodds, Oxford East Labour MP, has requested a meeting to discuss the withdrawal of the vital 3A route by the Oxford Bus Company, alongside the loss of an internal Greater Leeds estate service. The 3A was withdrawn when the route was altered to extend to the railway station, while the internal estate service stopped running due to road surface limitations, preventing double-decker buses from using it. The loss of the Grenoble Road Cowley Centre link and the internal bus has hit Greater Leeds residents hard. A joint letter was sent to Oxfordshire County Council's new Transport Cabinet member, Councillor Gareth Epps, on June the 5th. It is signed by Ms Dodds, Imade Edosomwan, County Councillor for the Lees, and Trish Elphinstone and Simon Ottino, Northfield Brook City Councillors, who are seeking a meeting to discuss restoring the services. They say that residents are now heavily reliant on the limited 600 bus, which does not run into the city centre and forces many to depend on Blackpurse Lees routes instead. Previous changes to the 3A have seen it shortened to terminate at Kasam Stadium, with campaigners warning this would weaken a key link between Greater Leeds, Cowley and Central Oxford. They argue that the current network leaves people isolated and struggling to access key destinations, such as Cowley Lidl, Tesco and Templar Square, and say that the situation is particularly unfair on older and vulnerable residents, shift workers and women who rely on local buses. Those in Fry's Court and Potter's Court are effectively cut off if they cannot walk long distances or feel unsafe doing so. To access alternative bus routes on Blackbird Lees, residents must travel through Fry's Hill Park, Spindlebury Nature Reserve or Gillian's Park, all of which are poorly lit. In the letter, councillors say that this creates significant safety concerns, especially for those travelling early in the morning or late at night. Residents have also raised fresh safety fears on social media about having to cross a busy roundabout near the stadium to reach a 3A stop. Without a safe pedestrian crossing or dropped curb, it has been described as a blind spot, difficult to navigate with pushchairs, and even harder for wheelchair users.
Dogs and their owners will don their finest pink attire for a fundraising walk to support a breast cancer charity. The Chatty Walk, Painted Pink event will take place in Abingdon on Sunday, June 28th, and will raise funds for Against Breast Cancer. It is part of the Paint Abingdon Pink campaign. Walkers and their dogs are encouraged to wear pink, with everything from scarves and hats to tutus and bows welcome as they stroll through the town in support of the cancer charity. The walk will begin at the Dog Spot on Abingdon High Street, an independent shop that will also take part in the fundraising. Organizers, including Anna Browning, owner of the Dog Spot, said, "Chatty Walk, which takes place every Sunday at the Dog Spot, is all about connection, getting people and dogs socializing and feeling part of the community. By linking it to Paint Abingdon Pink, which is taking place on July 4th in the Market Square, and supporting Against Breast Cancer, we want to give people a chance to come together for something positive." Community groups are being invited to apply for funding to support grassroots projects. Oxfordshire charities and groups have the opportunity to receive financial support through the Co-op's Local Community Fund, which is distributing a total of £3.5 million across the UK. The funding is available to causes that help improve access to food, support mental well-being, create opportunities for young people, promote community cohesion, or contribute to building sustainable futures. David Luckin, Head of Social Value and Community Engagement at Co-op, said, "Beginning the search for new local causes to take part in a fresh round of funding is always exciting. Our members have told us that they want Co-op to focus on the real issues affecting people's lives. Cooperation and people working together can be very powerful, and our funding enables local causes to deliver projects that focus on issues that matter most locally." The Co-op says that since launching the fund in 2016, Co-op members have helped support 40,000 causes across the UK. Co-op members can support a cause in their area by selecting it through the Co-op membership app. The application window for this round of funding will remain open until June 24th. A community drop-in event is being held to raise awareness and offer support around antisocial behavior. The event, organized by Cotsway Housing Association in collaboration with police and partner housing providers, will take place at the Corn Exchange in Whitney Market Square on Wednesday, July 1st from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. It is one of several activities taking place during ASB Awareness Week, a national campaign running from June 29th to July 5th, aimed at highlighting the impact of antisocial behavior and the work being done to address it. Allie Owens, Tenancy and Neighborhood Housing Manager at Cotsway, said, "With it being Antisocial Behavior Awareness Week, we wanted to take the opportunity to bring people together and raise awareness of the support that is available and the positive work happening in the communities. Antisocial behavior can have a serious impact on individuals and communities, and we are committed to working closely with our partners and customers to tackle it effectively. Events like this are a valuable opportunity to listen to concerns, raise awareness of the support available, and show how we can work together to create safer, stronger neighborhoods. We are looking forward to getting to see people in person and answer any questions."
Oxford streets filled with colour and love on Saturday as Oxford Pride returned with a scaled-back format that placed community at its centre. This year's events on Saturday, June 6th, reimagined Pride as something more intimate, according to organisers. Rather than a large-scale spectacle, the procession through the city centre felt grounded in local voices, officials said. This was a deliberate shift by organisers towards a more community-led celebration. The day began with a morning parade weaving through the city's historic streets. LGBTQ plus six-stripe rainbow flags were being waved, which represent life, healing and harmony. Music and handmade signs added to the atmosphere, creating a moving display of visibility and belonging. That focus carried into Pride Day, where performances, stalls and informal gathering spaces offered a chance to connect, reflect and celebrate. Volunteers remained at the heart of the event, continuing Oxford Pride's long-standing charity-led approach and its year-round support for LGBTQ plus people across Oxfordshire. The festivities continued into the evening with a street party in Paradise Street, followed by an after-party. the main stage in Leyden Square hosted a variety of acts including Oxford Proud Voices, Oxford Imps and Pearl Does Country. Peter Tatchell, a leading voice in global LGBTQ plus rights, spoke at the event too. The cabaret stage in Paradise Street featured Scarlett von Koch, Ishi Black and Blue Hydrangea. A spokesperson for the event said, "By stepping back from scale and returning to its roots, Oxford Pride 2026 kept its focus on what it believes matters most, community, visibility and connection." A charity superstore in Oxford has unveiled a colourful new display in support of Pride Month. The Oxfam Superstore in Cowley has given the store a Pride-themed display. The design was made with support from Oxfam GB's visual merchandising manager, David Humphrey, who has created similar displays for Oxfam stores across the UK. The Pride-themed display highlights books, music and other products by LGBTQIA+ authors or with related themes. Oxfam believes that a fair and just world includes everyone and that discrimination based on sexuality, along with race, sex or gender, fuels inequality and poverty. A High Court judge has ordered Oxford City Council not to submit its development plan to government amid years of planning battles over an Iffley Homes proposal set for judicial review. Oxford's Draft Local Plan 2045, which sets out areas where house building can take place for the next 19 years, has been held up by a High Court injunction ahead of a judicial review claim by campaign group Friends of Fields, Iffley. A spokesperson for the group said, "We hope that the council will decide to see sense." To progress a local plan, Council submit a draft to the Secretary of State for Housing ahead of an approval referendum. Currently, the plan includes Iffley Meadows in its list of sites allocated for housing, and a motion to remove it by the Independent Oxford Alliance was voted down in January. The Friends of Fields group has been fighting a 32-home plan for land off Meadow Lane put forward by the city in 2020. The local authority says the injunction will slow the delivery of much-needed affordable homes and it will defend its process in making the plan.
South Oxfordshire has become a hub for new data center developments. The district recorded the highest number of planning applications for data centers in England between 2021 and 2026, according to data collected through Freedom of Information requests by 2580 Group. South Oxfordshire District Council received 7 applications during this period, approving 6 of them. Sheffield City Council and Buckinghamshire Council each received 6 applications, the next highest figures among responding councils. Michael Scott, director at 2580 Group, said, "Data centers are a critical part of our national infrastructure. These sites provide the power and capacity needed to run the digital tools that businesses and consumers now rely on every day, from the internet and apps like Instagram and Facebook to CRMs and large language models like ChatGPT and Claude. As demand grows, developers, investors, and councils will need to think carefully about where new data centers are built and how they are delivered." Of the 50 councils that provided data, a total of 84 data center planning applications were recorded with 54 approvals. Applications have risen sharply in recent years, doubling from 13 in 2024 to 26 in 2025. Mr. Scott said the trend is likely to continue and highlighted the importance of meeting industry standards. More than 600 new jobs have been created across Oxfordshire through a government-backed development fund. A further 256 roles have been safeguarded in the county thanks to the £8.4 million investment delivered by the Getting Building Fund, which has supported 6 major projects. The funding, championed by Enterprise Oxfordshire, formerly OxLEP, has also enabled the future expansion of the University of Oxford's clinical biomanufacturing facility, which played a key role in producing the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID vaccine. Helen Ryan Wallace, Director of Strategic Development and Programs at Enterprise Oxfordshire, said, "We are proud to share the achievements of the Getting Building Fund and just some of the significant outcomes reached through this government investment. The fact that the fund has brought 646 new jobs into the county and over time will enable so many more just goes to show what can be achieved for local communities through this kind of investment, particularly following such a turbulent time as the COVID-19 pandemic. We are pleased to have secured such significant investment and utilized it in such a way that it has delivered so extensively for the county, focusing on key priorities such as the climate challenge and the regeneration of our high streets, something we continue to focus on, for instance, through our Helping High Streets program. We will continue to support our communities and partners to unlock vital opportunities and outcomes such as those provided through this investment. Other supported projects include the Green Construction Skills Center, which delivers training programs to address the growing demand for green construction skills, and Mini TESA, the Energy System Accelerator Pilot. Mini TESA brings together academic and industry researchers in a multidisciplinary hub that focuses on the transition to low-carbon energy solutions. The Meanwhile in Oxfordshire scheme, also backed by the fund, transformed vacant retail units in high streets across the county into affordable premises for more than 140 organizations, including independent shops, cultural venues, creative studios, and co-working spaces. A total of 401 businesses were supported through the fund, while 508 opportunities were created for new learners, demonstrating its broad impact on the county's economic growth and education sector. The Business Investment Fund, part of the Getting Building Fund, awarded grants of up to £100,000 to 51 small and medium-sized businesses. These grants supported capital projects aimed at economic recovery and job creation across industries such as food and drink, creative, life sciences, green tech, and high-value manufacturing.
Conservation work is underway to preserve a well-known historical landmark. The 100-foot Grade II listed Farringdon Folly Tower, located on Folly Hill, is now surrounded by scaffolding for essential repairs funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. Built in 1935 by Lord Berners, the tower has suffered water damage and weather-related deterioration to its brickwork and timber. The restoration project will include repointing, window repairs, and work on the stairs, floors, and ceilings. Sjoerd Voigt of the Farringdon Folly Tower Trust said, "We are thrilled that the repairs have now finally started. This would not have been possible without the support from the National Lottery Heritage Fund. This grant received will not only preserve a much-loved landmark, but also will help us to share its stories with even more people near and far. Thanks to the National Lottery players, we can continue to protect and celebrate this very important part of Farringdon's identity and heritage." The project is also focused on strengthening the Trust's long-term financial stability and enhancing public engagement. Narratives and interpretation about the tower and surrounding woodland are being developed, exploring its history and natural beauty. Stuart MacLeod, Director of England, London and South at the National Lottery Heritage Fund, said, "This project will not only safeguard the tower for the future, but also will open up new opportunities for people of all ages to enjoy it for generations to come."
A round-the-clock emergency pet care service has launched in Oxford. Iffley Vets on Iffley Road has launched the new 24/7 service offering care for pet emergencies. The service is open to all pet owners in the area, not just existing clients of the practice. Catherine Morrison, veterinary surgeon at Iffley Vets, said, "Emergencies are stressful, and it is incredibly important that pet owners access care straight away. We hope that without the added stress of traveling to a vet practice out of town for emergency care, we will be able to help many pets and their owners in our local community. And we don't want pet owners to put off seeking care due to unknown costs, so we offer a £99 consultation fee for emergency care. An emergency team will initially include 3 vets and 3 veterinary nurses. The practice has handled around 200 emergency care requests over the past year. There are also plans to open a dedicated emergency veterinary hospital in Oxford, and the practice has agreed a lease on a second local site. Plans to replace phone boxes in the city with high-tech so-called street hubs have been revealed despite use of hubs by drug dealers and antisocial behavior reports at other locations. Street hubs are 2-meter-high digital advertising screens with tablets for council news, a free phone, and Wi-Fi. There are more than 960 across the UK, and some have drawn controversy, with police reports of them as a persistent nuisance linked in incidents of violence, drug use, and antisocial behavior. In proposals submitted to Oxford City Council, BT shares its plan to remove 2 phone boxes on Diamond Place, Summertown, and replace them with a hub on the pavement outside of 253 Banbury Road. In its plan, BT said, "We take our responsibility towards community well-being and antisocial behavior seriously." It adds, "Where possible, we address any concerns before or as part of the planning application process which every street hub must go through. Unfortunately, this is not always possible, and pre-existing or emerging concerns around misuse may need to be addressed once a street hub is active. In deciding the best course of action, advice from police, other emergency services and local authorities will always take precedence, followed by feedback from other government bodies and input from residents and businesses." It notes that a small number of locations drew attention to local drug issues. This involved misuse of free call services. BT says that since these instances, it has invested significantly in developing call restriction capabilities. Crime and clutter concerns led to street hubs being refused planning permission from several councils between 2018 and May of this year, including Bristol City, Brighton, and Hove and Middlesbrough. The plan also argues that removing old payphones reduces antisocial behavior and gives entire communities access to an unprecedented suite of essential free services. It says moving forward, hubs could be able to take on future technologies such as air quality monitoring, emergency messaging, 4G/5G mobile coverage. BT adds that the hubs can provide councils with monitoring data from their locations, such as on air, sound, and light. It also offers local authorities 876 hours of free council advertising per unit per year. Proposals note that direct replacement of payphones on Diamond Place was not possible due to the narrow width of the pavement, which would restrict pedestrian movement. Despite this, it says, the proposed design is slimmer and takes a more compact profile than the existing BT payphone boxes that the proposed street hub is replacing. Unlike payphones, calls are played out loud with a handset, although there is an opportunity to use headphones. Almost 100 people have backed calls for an Oxford convenience store to be allowed to expand so that it can add an every parcel service. Nisa Local in Botley Road, which opened in 2025 in the former Pickle and Lime unit, was refused permission in March 2026 for a single-story rear extension and steel security shutter, with the City Council citing overdevelopment of the already extended building. The extra space would accommodate new services, including an every parcel delivery point and 2 additional cook frozen meals freezers. Plans also include moving the Costa Coffee self-service machine to the front of the shop and creating more room for Bacon Bite products and loaves from Oxford-based Natural Bread Company. The original application drew 1 official comment in support and 4 objections, raising concerns such as parking pressure, delivery traffic, and noise. Since an appeal was lodged last month, however, supporters have mobilized to argue the changes would bring much-needed services to West Oxford. According to appeal papers, 32 interested parties have formally backed the challenge by shop owner Mansi Chowdhury, who runs the business independently from the national chain. A separate informal petition has attracted 48 signatures wishing the businessmen good luck, bringing the total number of supporters to 80. Mrs. Chowdhury said he hopes to sign a contract with Evri to provide a much-needed parcel service for Botley Road residents, something she believes is currently missing locally.
2 businesses in Oxford city centre were burgled in a double raid on Sunday, June the 7th. A police cordon was put up around Nora's Antiques in Tull Street on Monday morning, June the 8th, while officers investigated the incident. Police say that the family-run antiques shop was broken into shortly before midnight the night before, June the 7th. A large part of the pavement was also sectioned off by Thames Valley Police during the investigation. A Thames Valley Police spokesman said, "We received a report of a burglary at an antiques store in Turl Street, Oxford, at around 11:50 p.m. on Sunday. Officers are conducting a number of inquiries to identify those involved and establish what has been taken. We are appealing for anyone who witnessed anything suspicious or who may have relevant CCTV or mobile footage from the area at around that time to please contact police on 101 or via our website, quoting this reference number 432-602-85228. Founded in 1978, it's not the first time that Nora's Antiques has been burgled in recent years. The day before the first lockdown was announced in the pandemic, on May the 22nd, 2020, thieves broke through a window and stole a large amount of expensive jewellery from inside. Meanwhile, also on Sunday, June the 7th, Mahogany Hairdressing in Little Clarendon Street was also burgled. There was smashed glass and police at the scene, one eyewitness told us. No arrests have been made at this stage as police launch an investigation into the suspected burglary. It's not clear whether the two burglaries are linked. Thames Valley Police have been asked about this. Data from the force suggests that the number of burglaries in Oxfordshire has been on the decline. Year on year, there's been a 4.7% decline in burglaries of businesses, recorded from 616 down to 587. But the data also says that for last year, just 72 of the reported business burglaries resulted in a positive outcome. Meanwhile, an Oxford independent technology retailer has closed its city centre store. Apple retailer Western Computer has shut its store in Gloucester Green. Western Computer is a UK-based Apple-authorised reseller and Apple-authorised service provider. The company sells Apple products such as Macs, iPads, iPhones and accessories, while also offering repairs, technical support, training and business IT services. The business was founded in 1984 and became one of the longest established Apple specialists in the United Kingdom. The brand has now merged with computer giant Albion Computers in 2024, leading to the closure of many shops.
The public are being invited to share feedback on fresh plans for the covered market. Oxford City Council has launched a consultation on improvement proposals as part of its £8 million upgrade program for the historic market in Oxford City Centre. A drop-in session was held in the market on June 11th from 4 to 7 p.m. near Hamblin Bread and Sushi Bowl, where visitors could view the latest plans and speak to project staff. Susan Brown, leader of Oxford City Council, said, "The covered market is incredibly loved by people across Oxford and beyond, and that's been very clear in recent conversations and feedback. The proposals focus on upgrading aging infrastructure and facilities to support the market's long-term future while maintaining its historic character. Improvements include a new open court with seating, upgraded public toilets with increased female provision, upgraded utilities and services, improved lighting and entrances, and additional retail space. Other changes include a new substation to meet future energy needs, improved Wi-Fi, and enhancements to Market Street."
Kevin Sorway, Oxfordshire County Council's Library Services Manager, has said the following information about the Home Library Service, which you may or may not already know about. After you have listened to this information, which David Field, an Oxtalk volunteer, is recording for Oxtalk listeners, you can either ring or email the Home Library Service yourself, or if you wish, you can ask a friend, family member or carer to contact Kevin on your behalf. I hope this is a service which you will find very useful. Please let me know if you do. This from Margaret, Chair of Oxtalk. Home Library Service. Would you like to borrow library books but are unable to visit the library for any reason? If you're finding it difficult to get to a library, the Home Library Service may be able to help. The Home Library Service is run by Oxfordshire County Council and serves 830 customers across the county. With the help of volunteers, it looks after and delivers books and audiovisual items to those who struggle to physically visit a library due to their personal circumstances. The service is completely free of charge to customers, many of whom are elderly or housebound, and it can be used on a short-term basis following illness or hospitalisation. Those with carer responsibilities are also welcome to apply. How it works. Contact us to discuss the kind of books, large print or regular print, DVDs, audiobooks on CD, music CD or DVDs that you like to read or enjoy. We can then arrange for a library volunteer to deliver these to you in your own home. Our volunteers are DBS checked, wear an identification badge and provide a helpful and friendly service. Whenever possible, we try and arrange for the same volunteer to visit you each time. Your library materials will be delivered and collected every 3 weeks. The Home Library Service is free of charge, and there is no charge for requests or late returns. We also have a few CD players that we can loan out, so customers can trial an audio to see if it works for them prior to purchasing a new machine. How to register. To register for this service or for further information, call your local library or telephone the Home Library Service on 01865 810259. That's 01865 810259. Or you can email them. The email address is homelibraryservice, that's all one word, at oxfordshire.gov.uk.
TV star Adam Henson has given an insight into his later years' plans during a talk at the Oxfordshire Cotswolds. The presenter has hosted the BBC's iconic Countryfile programme for 25 years, having initially got the gig back in 2001. Born and raised on his family's Bemborough farm in the Cotswolds, Mr. Henson has become one of the country's best-known farmers on screen. Away from television, the 60-year-old runs Cotswolds Farm Park near Guiting Power, where he welcomes thousands of visitors each year. Mr. Henson had an exclusive chat with the Oxford Mail this week at Porthaven's Cotswolds Gate Care Home in Burford. The TV star was visiting to give a talk about his life with dogs over the years and stopped to sign books afterwards. Praising the care home, the 60-year-old remarked at how he loved the place and joked to the audience that he needed to put his deposit down to join. In the talk with this newspaper afterwards, Mr. Henson added, "It's an absolute joy. I've driven up to the one in Derbyshire in the past, as well as the one in Cheltenham, and then this is my second visit here. This one is just 20 minutes from home, and coming through Burford is gorgeous. The home is beautifully capped and decorated, and I was sitting in this room thinking, I quite like this wallpaper in my house. The interior design of these places is so lovely, and I'm getting to an age when I'm starting to think about my later years and where I'll go and what I'll do and what it's going to be like. I'm hoping my children will be rich enough to pay for me to go into a very nice home like this. It's a gorgeous place, and to be welcomed at the door was lovely. Everybody's been so helpful, getting me cups of tea and all the tech work with the talk's presentation. So, you know I'm not just saying it, but it's pretty faultless, really." Mr. Henson also complimented the crowd, appreciating the small-style venue, which made for a more personal event. "They were a really lovely audience. We had some laughs and some very good questions," he said. "It was quite intimate because there weren't too many people in the room, so it's quite engaging and catching people's eyes. You know you're getting a reaction. You're interacting with everyone around you in the room rather than when you're speaking to hundreds of people. So it was lovely."
Rolling Stones star Sir Mick Jagger dined with Oxford University students before his surprise gig at a pub in the city. The rock legend was in the city alongside with his fiancée Melanie Hamrick, visiting Oriel College for Evensong on Sunday, June 7th. Sir Mick dined with students before joining a small group at the Half Moon Pub in St. Clement's later on in the evening. It was here that the 82-year-old sang the folk song Handsome Molly with a local Irish band and Stones keyboard player Matt Clifford to stunned pubgoers. Oriel said, Sir Mick Jagger and partner Melanie Hamrick visited Oriel College on Sunday. As guests of the Provost and Lady Mendoza, Mick joined students at Evensong and dined at High Table. After dinner and drinks in the SCR, a small group went off to the pub where Mick gave an impromptu performance with Rolling Stones keyboard player Matt Clifford and Oriel politics academic Robert Chia. The college also uploaded a clip of the impromptu pub performance across its social media channels, including Facebook. I caught a glimpse of one of them from the side and said to my mates, wait, is that Mick Jagger? A few moments later, someone hopped onto the piano and Mick just started belting out some lyrics. The most surreal part was that almost nobody seemed to realize it was him. There were no crowds and you could really tell just how much fun Mick was having. The Half Moon is an intimate Irish pub in St. Clement's, famous for its vibrant late-night traditional music sessions. It serves as a cozy retreat for locals, students, and folk musicians, and, up until the 1980s, was the city's smallest pub. Famously, the Rolling Stones played at Oxford University in June 1964 at a Magdalen College commemoration ball. The event had a special interest because the Stones were nobodies when they were booked to appear, but very big stars indeed by the time of the gig 12 months later. They were obliged to interrupt a U.S. tour and fly back to Britain to fulfill their contract, which cost them £1,500 in air fees to pick up a £100 fee. Mr. Jagger, who last performed with the Rolling Stones in 2024, met Ms. Hamrick while touring with the band, and the pair have been together since 2014. It was revealed last April in the Perry Match interview with the former ballerina that the rock icon proposed 2 or 3 years ago. She added that while the engagement has been in place for a while, she does not know if they will actually tie the knot. Ms. Hamrick said, maybe one day we'll marry, maybe not. We are so happy in our current life that I would be too afraid to change anything. We try to support each other, to be there for each other, and make sure everyone is happy. That is all that matters to me and all I strive for.
Sir Ed Davey turned down a job to be James Bond while studying at Oxford University. The Liberal Democrats leader said he was approached by MI6 while at Jesus College in Turl Street. Sir Ed, who the Telegraph said was more Benny Hill than James Bond due to his election campaign stunts, received a tap on the shoulder but refused the offer. Years ago, a simple tap on the shoulder was the clandestine way that MI6 chose to recruit before formal applications were brought in. MI5 and MI6 would often target students at Oxford or Cambridge with the tap in a bid to find a spy. Among those who claim they were once tapped include Richard Osman at Cambridge and Roald Dahl, who went on to work as an intelligence officer and spy for MI6. Sir Ed told the Walking the Dog podcast that he declined the offer, believing that he would have made a very bad spy. He said, I applied for the civil service and MI6 sent me this letter out of the blue saying there were some positions open in the civil service that weren't open to competition and we'd like you to apply. I went and you had to tell them the inside leg measurement of your great aunt with all these sort of background checks. And then I went to an interview. He said, before we go any further, I'd have to sign the Official Secrets Act. So I did. He said, you probably guessed this is for the Secret Service. And he told me what we'd do, how I'd learn to be a spy. You'd learn languages, all that sort of training. There's a joke about 007 Davy, but I don't labour that point. I would probably have been a very bad spy. He said the life of a spy wasn't attracting me, having said he possibly could tell his wife or girlfriend about being a spy. I liked James Bond films and all that, but I realised I wasn't like that, the senior politician added. Sir Ed was studying politics, philosophy and economics, PPE, at Jesus College in the late 1980s when he was approached. In 2021, MI5 Director General Ken McCallum said that no one is chosen for spy roles anymore. Instead, everyone applies, indicated that the traditional shoulder-tapping recruitment method is a thing of the past, according to The Telegraph. St Anthony's, a graduate college in North Oxford, became notorious during the Cold War as a spy college for its focus on Soviet affairs and rumours of high levels of recruitment. Nigella Lawson was also allegedly approached by MI5 following her graduation from Lady Margaret Hall in Oxford, but was warned against it by her dad, Nigel Lawson.
Oxford United are back in League One after their championship relegation, providing an opportunity for some forgotten names to step up to the plate. Matt Bloomfield's Ewes finished 22nd last season and will return to the third division after a two-year stint in the championship. With 10 out-of-contract players already out the door, Oxford have maintained a good core of players ready for the next season. There is work to be done to trim the fat of the squad, but there are a few yellows names who have the opportunity to take the third tier by storm. Tyler Goodrum. Hopefully the Ewes Academy product has not been forgotten by fans since his New Year's Day injury, which kept him out for the remainder of the season. Goodrum shone in his last season in League One, which was a breakout year for the 22-year-old, scoring 8 goals and registering 4 assists in 40 appearances. After the departure of attacking midfielder Jamie Donnelly following the end of his loan spell from Tottenham Hotspur, there is an opportunity for the Wickham-born midfielder to lock down the position. With a full recovery, pre-season, and 2 years' experience at a higher level, there is no reason why a hungry Goodrum cannot take League One by storm next season. Edomo Emaku. After a slow start in OX4, the last few championship fixtures saw the Irishman find some form and break into Bloomfield's side. Emaku has 3 years' second-tier experience as an impact substitute with Millwall and Oxford and will relish the potential opportunity to play consistently at a level where he will surely fancy himself at. United fans are yet to see the best of the 22-year-old, who recently made his first senior international appearance for the Republic of Ireland. However, glimpses of direct, pacey, exciting wing play were demonstrated in substitute features against Derby County and Wrexham, and a start against Sheffield Wednesday in the Yellows' final few championships games. Jian Jinwu. Emako and Goodrum will not be without competition. Jinwu joined in January from the Korean League, where he was highly rated, but the transition to English football was always going to take a moment. The 26-year-old made 8 appearances for the Ewes in the second half of the season, but it was not really enough to gauge his true ability. With a pre-season under his belt, Jinwu has the opportunity to adjust to the English game and rise to the challenge of League One. Naturally a winger, Bloomfield used the South Korean as an attacking midfielder on one or two occasions off the bench. Oxford United have confirmed that they have been formally served with a claim for judicial review by Friends of Stratfield Brake, FOSB, over their planned new stadium. The Ewes had signed the Section 106 planning agreement with Oxfordshire County Council and Charbel District Council for their new stadium in February. This agreement enabled full and final planning permission for the EFL Championships Club's new stadium, which will be located on a 17-acre site known as the Triangle, just south of the Kidlington Roundabout in Oxfordshire, to be issued. The news represents one of the most significant milestones to date in Oxford United's plans to build a 16,000-capacity stadium, said the club 4 months ago. These plans also include a 180-bedroom hotel, restaurant, conference center, health and well-being space, and a gym as well as a community plaza. FOSB has consistently opposed the plans throughout the process and, in April, took the complaints to the High Court by attempting to launch a judicial review. United confirmed on Monday afternoon that it had been formally hit with a claim. The club said in a statement, "The club filed its acknowledgement of service and summary grounds of resistance with the court on June 3rd, 2026. This responds to the claim in detail and also requests that the case be expedited by the High Court, given the harm further delays and uncertainty could cause. Our request to expedite the claim has been supported by Charbel District Council and, if granted, would hopefully see a hearing scheduled at some point during the summer. The club continued, "We are confident that the planning application was robust and considered thoroughly by the Charbel District Council, and the club will fully support the council in defending their decision to grant planning permission." The Hughes went on to state that updates will be provided in due course. Charbel District Council previously said in a statement that it was confident in its decision and in the event of any judicial review will robustly defend its position. A spokesperson for Oxford United previously said, "A rigorous and detailed planning process was followed by Charbel District Council, and we look forward to supporting them defend their decision. Any interested party in English planning decisions can challenge a verdict in the High Court via a judicial review. This can only analyze the legality of the process through which a decision was reached by a planning body and is not concerned with the conclusions of that process and whether those were, quote unquote, right."
Recent weather extremes reminded Memory Lane of the Oxford Horse Show. The Oxford Horse Show has always attracted large numbers of competitors and spectators, but never had what could be described as an easy ride. Organisers often complained that weather-wise it was either too hot or too wet, and financially they had difficulty balancing the books. One year, because of the high temperature, judges relaxed the rules and allowed riders in the Fox Hunter trials to discard their jackets. At other times, umbrellas were seen in abundance. In 1963, Oxford City Council refused by 5 votes to give £1,000, and the show went ahead only through the goodwill of individuals, organisations and firms. Secretary Jim Cox had said, "The show must have civic support. You can't keep on getting money from the few for a show that attracts so many. It is worrying. We would be much happier if we could rest from our money-making tasks." Chairman Dennis Organ had added, "If we get further into the mire, we will never be able to recover, and we will have to close down the show." In 1965, a horse called Alan Boy, ridden by Angela Clark Brown, was eliminated for wearing 6 shoes, although the report did not explain how a 4-legged animal could find room for so many. The show was held in various locations, including the University Rugby Ground in Iffley Road, Port Meadow, and the Salesian College playing fields at Horsepath, where the organisers had more groans. The spectators' area was covered with freshly cut hay, which wrapped tightly round the driving shafts of at least 3 cars, forcing them to stall. There was clearly never a dull moment at the Oxford Horse Show. It had been started during the Second World War to raise money for local prisoners of war, and was held during the first bank holiday weekend in August. The last show was held in 1965, when the government abolished the early August bank holiday, and Mr. Cox retired as secretary after 15 years. Firefighters are urging people to stay alert and safe during the World Cup. With fans gathering at home or hosting barbecues, Oxfordshire County Council's Fire and Rescue Service is encouraging the public to take extra care to avoid preventable accidents. Deb Forder, the safety manager, said, "A penalty shootout or drama around a video referee decision are big attention grabbers, making it easy to momentarily take our eyes off the fire safety ball. So, play it safe. You could prepare food before kickoff or buy takeaways and home-delivered pizzas to remove the need to do any cooking." Ms. Forder also reminded fans to avoid leaving cooking unattended. She said, "Remember, if you're cooking your own meal, remove any pan off the hob and turn off the cooker if you're leaving the kitchen to grab the latest on the big game, and don't drink and fry." The service recommends avoiding chip pans in favour of safer options, Ms. Forder said, we recommend avoiding chip pans, which create an unnecessary home fire risk. Instead, use a thermostat-controlled deep fat fryer, or better, an air fryer. Barbecue safety is also a concern during the tournament. The service advises to never leave a barbecue unattended. Fans are also reminded to keep flags, banners and bunting away from candles and barbecues.
Firefighters are urging people to stay safe around open water. The warning comes ahead of Drowning Prevention Week, which runs from June 13th to June 20th and aims to raise awareness of the dangers of wild swimming in rivers, lakes, reservoirs, and the sea. During the national campaign, Oxfordshire County Council's Fire and Rescue Service is reminding the public that even on a hot day, open water can remain cold and pose serious risks. Dem Forder, Safety Manager for Oxfordshire County Council's Fire and Rescue Service, said, open water can look appealing, especially on warm days, but it is also very dangerous. That is why the practical advice we're offering is so important, particularly during periods of hot weather when residents are more likely to be tempted to take a dip. Ms. Forder said people should let friends and family know their planned route near water and expected return time. She said residents should consider carrying a whistle and a phone in a waterproof pouch and using supervised venues or swimming pools instead of open bodies of water. Even experienced swimmers can get into difficulty in cold water, which can trigger a cold shock response and lead to abnormal heart rhythms, which can cause sudden death. Ms. Forder said, if you fall in, remember to relax, lean back, and float to live until you can control your breathing. If you are submerged in water unexpectedly, your body will gasp for air, meaning that you could breathe in water and hyperventilate. This overbreathing can make you lightheaded, and as your brain is deprived of oxygen, you may become disoriented. She also warned about attempting rescues in the water. Anyone who sees someone in trouble should call 999 or 112, shout for help, and throw a floating object, rather than entering the water themselves. Ms. Forder said, a simple change to our behavior can reduce the risk of drowning. Avoid high-risk areas, be aware of your surroundings, and know how to react if you or someone else falls in. The Fire and Rescue Service highlighted the hidden dangers of open water. Reservoirs, lakes, and rivers may look inviting, but can conceal hazards such as machinery, rocks, shopping trolleys, branches, and fish hooks or broken fishing line. Even on warm days, the water can be cold enough to numb limbs and cause drowning. Currents under the surface can also be strong and unpredictable. People are advised to choose lifeguarded beaches if planning to swim in the sea. More advice is available on the Water Safety section of Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue's YouTube channel or on the Royal Life Saving Society's UK website.
Thames Water is cracking down on illegal connections to its network. The water company has secured 23 convictions in the first 5 months of 2026 against companies and individuals for unauthorised use of its clean water network. The convictions relate to 47 separate offences and have resulted in fines and legal costs totalling nearly £90,000. Claire Ruman's illegal connections manager at Thames Water said, our efforts to identify and stop illegal connections are crucial to protecting the integrity of our network. This crucial work prevents millions of litres of water from being wasted and helps us meet our statutory duty to safeguard the supply. As we ask customers to use water responsibly and deploy teams around the clock to fix leaks, we are equally committed to tackling unlawful use of our system. We will always try to work constructively with individuals and businesses to educate them and reduce the risk of repeat offences. Illegal connections can lead to significant water loss, compromised water quality, and financial losses that undermine infrastructure investment and environmental protection. Offences involve unauthorised connections to water mains, illegal water abstraction from pipes, and splitting single supplies across multiple properties without metering.
People are being urged to check online pharmacies are registered following an increase in fake sites. Fake online pharmacies are reportedly posing serious risks, including selling untested and unsafe medicines, failing to deliver purchased items, and refusing refunds, according to Oxford University Hospitals. These unlicensed sites may also sell prescription-only medicines without a prescription, potentially endangering health. Fake weight loss medications containing harmful ingredients and faulty devices that deliver incorrect doses of medicine are among the products being sold.
The daughter of a former factory worker is aiming to reunite workers with commemorative plaques. Dutch coffee-making giant Jacob Douwe Egberts announced last June that its plant off Ruscott Avenue in Banbury will shut. The factory is home to an honours board made up of plaques honouring those who worked there for 30 or more years. Jo Mobley, having recovered her father's plaque, is attempting to reunite more than 600 others on the board with theirs. Miss Mobley has started a Facebook page, Help Reunite 30 Years Service Plaques from JDE. Its group has more than 230 followers, with workers and family members alike trying to retrieve the plaques. Talking to the BBC, she said, "It started as a very small mission, and it's ended up very big. It snowballed into trying to find more than 600 names. I would like every person, or quite a few have passed away, any of their families, to be reunited with their plaques," she said. The group is working with Banbury's Labour MP, Sean Woodcock, to retrieve the plaques. But JDE and Chalbell District Council believe the plaques should be displayed elsewhere in commemoration of the workers. The plant, which employed about 160 people, originally opened as General Foods Factory in 1964. Since the closure announcement, JDE has been slowing operations and intend to wind down fully by December.
A dinosaur footprint trackway unearthed at a quarry near Bicester is the largest of its kind in the world, researchers have this week revealed. Some 200 extra footprints were found last summer on top of what was already discovered in the summer of 2024 at Dewar's Farm Quarry near Bicester. Dating back 166 million years, the footprints were buried in the mud of the quarry and found by a team of researchers at the Oxford University Museum of Natural History and University of Birmingham. The week-long dig resulted in hundreds more individual prints from four trackways being identified and documented, each made by sauropod dinosaurs, large, long-necked herbivores such as Sitiosaurus. Excavation lead Emma Nichols from Oxford University's Museum of Natural History said it was the longest exposed continuous sauropod trackway in the world. She told the BBC there were four trackways of sauropod footprints and none of them were the same size as each other. What that tells us is a possibility of a bunch of different things. It could be that they were all Sitiosaurus and they were moving as a family herd, or as a herd of different aged individuals, not necessarily related. Or it could be that we have more than one type of sauropod. Kayla Miller, the MP for Bicester and Woodstock, joined calls last year to open up the dinosaur highway to the public for tourism. But as Natural England told us, the site is owned by a private operator, Smiths, Bletchingdon, and the question of access is at the landowner's discretion. The landowner said planning obligations mean it is not an option for the trackway to remain open, and the company is obliged for the land to be restored to agricultural use. Dewar's Farm Quarry forms part of an Ardley Trackway's Site of Special Scientific Interest, a designated status since 2010 for its dinosaur trackways. In 1997, Oxfordshire was host to another major excavation in which a Megalosaurus trackway was discovered. Megalosaurus are 9 meters long, and Ms. Nichols said were Britain's answer to the T-Rex. Sitiosaurus, meanwhile, had long necks and four legs and could reach about 18 meters in length. Ms. Nichols said the land 166 million years ago in what is now Oxfordshire was a really lovely tropical kind of lush environment. Britain was actually underwater, and there was a shallow inland sea covering Oxfordshire, but there were a series of islands, like the Bahamas or Florida Keys, and that's where the dinosaurs would have been living, she said.
Didcot Railway Centre visitors have been celebrating National Biscuit Day. June the 5th was the National Day of Celebration. There were lots of events at the Steam Heritage Centre to mark the occasion. The celebration included engine number 4079 Pendennis Castle carrying a replica headboard from the 1920s, which was linked to an excursion to Huntley and Palmer's famous biscuit factory at Reading. There was also a display of Huntley and Palmer's biscuit tins provided by the Reading Museum. Bohemia Aslin and Lila Bish Grucott from the museum wore vintage costumes as workers at the factory and gave talks about the history of the company. Founded in the 1820s in Reading, the town became famous for biscuit manufacturing until this ceased in 1976. Visitors followed a biscuit trail around the railway centre and were given train rides behind Pendennis Castle.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, we now have a new landline number you can call. The number is 01865 377 635. That is 01865 377 635. Please leave a message for Michelle, Oxtalk's listener coordinator. You can also telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on Alexa devices through the Talking Newspaper skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.
Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Oxtalk using Alexa. To listen to Oxtalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Oxtalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.